Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talking Terps. I'm your host, Zach Kiesel. We're back. Football season's back. Maryland kicks off their 2023 season against Towson on Saturday afternoon. And I got my guys, Mike Popovic, Pat Donahue here with me. Guys, I don't know about you. I know for me, it seems like this football season has snuck up on me more than usual, which I'm not really sure why. Although I think, Mike, you can probably relate to this. You got your O's shirt on. As Orioles fans, we're usually used to football season, like we're counting down starting in May because the Orioles are so bad. This year, it's like the opposite. It's like, can we hold off on football season a little bit?
I couldn't agree with you more. And with all the intrigue too, not just with the Terps, but the Ravens this year with the new offense and Lamar Jackson got his contract and they gave him some weapons. But I got to tell you, I just have not been that into it. When the season starts, I'll be into it. But yeah, the Orioles have captured our attention and then summited, and it's been great. And I think since we haven't experienced something like this in a long time, we're just so fully enveloped in baseball season.
Yeah, I'm hoping this pod will get me kind of juiced up for the season. Although the first game, I feel like, especially for college, because that starts before the pros, the first game always feels strange. Feels like you have to get into it a little bit. Pat, I know your baseball team has been a little bit more successful in the past, so you're probably a little bit more used to the multitasking of sports.
Well, I think we've had our, you know, our ups and downs for sure, and our good stretches and our bad stretches in terms of years. But I agree. I mean, it's funny how the baseball season kind of dictates the hype going into the NFL and college football seasons. And like Mike said, I mean, there's plenty of intrigue around both of our pro teams and the Terps this year. And it wasn't really until I kind of started writing some of these recent articles for the site previewing the football team that I got a little bit excited for this team. I think it's going to be a fun year for Terps football, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to jump right in. We're going to go over the roster kind of position by position real quick on each one first, and then we'll look at Towson a little bit, the first opponent. But starting with the offense, you got to start with the quarterback, Talia Tungavailoa, returning for his fourth and final season with the Terps. The rumor over the offseason, which was confirmed by him, was that a random SEC school, we pretty much know random. It's Auburn, $1.5 million NIL offer that he turned down. Thank God his brother plays professional football and he doesn't need the money. But Pat, can you just break down, you know, he's been so good here for the last 3 years. He's set so many records. He's got so many more that he's probably going to set this year. Where does the progression need to come from in his final year? What steps does he still need to take in his final year of college?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you said, I mean, he's definitely been over the years one of the better, if not the best quarterback we've seen at Maryland in a while. So it's really hard to nitpick and ask for more. But I think that all of us as Maryland fans would like to see him, I guess, perform better, but more so close out, lead the Terps into the win for those marquee games, you know, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. You know, we've taken strides in the last couple of years. Mike Locksley's built this program up to being a 6-7-8 win bowl eligible team. That's kind of the expectation now. But can you get to that 9-10 win season by pulling out some wins against Blue Bloods? You know, if we're not going to do it with this quarterback, who are we going to do it with? So this is his last year, and he's got talent around him. So I think that's really to cap off a successful career. That would be the next step for him.
And Mike, I know one thing that has been talked about the last few years is that they want to take more shots down the field on offense. We saw it a little bit more last season, some speed at wide receiver. Dan Enos opened up the playbook a little bit for him. Do you think Josh Gattis, is that still a focus for this team, taking more shots down the field? You got a lot of speed at receiver. We'll talk about them in a second.
Yeah, I think they need to do that. And I think you need to take advantage of having a fourth-year quarterback. To answer your question at the top, too, I think he needs to make more consistently elite throws. And then on the deep shots, they need to attack that more, no question, and expand that offense. And you know, they had the wide receiving core the last couple of years to do it. They've got some really good ones here, too, so there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to do that. But you know, I think as Pat alluded to, he doesn't have a signature win, though, a major signature win. And that's what he's missing, and just more consistent consistency on elite throws. And, you know, his emotions at times get the best of him. Hopefully at this point now, he could keep those in check when the chips are down a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think that's going to be a theme of this season as a whole, is trying to get a lot of guys this signature win. You look at Mike Locksley, trying to get him a signature win. And this seems like his best chance so far, and maybe his best chance for a little while.
I mean, look, real quick, they came close last year. They played the top two teams of the Big Ten down to the wire in Michigan and Ohio State.
Absolutely. Right.
It's been getting closer. Like, it's been a progression. We've seen when Locksley came in here, he's talked about wanting to rebuild the culture and get this train back on the tracks. And I was actually thinking about it a little bit earlier as I was just trying to prepare for this podcast, was I think he's done that. I mean, I think we can look back and kind of see the progression that Locksley has laid out for this program. And yeah, that next step is that marquee win, that win against the Blue Blood, and maybe getting over that 8-win hump.
Yeah, look, guys, Maryland hasn't had three straight winning seasons since Ralph Frisian's first 3 years. And before that, you have to go back to the Bobby Ross era in the 80s. So yeah, if they can get another winning season, this is something that's been done three times in the last 40 years at Maryland. I mean, that'll blow your mind a little bit. I mean, it speaks to how bad Maryland's been, but it also speaks to Mike Locksley doing what he talked about, raising the floor of the program. And now you can start to raise the ceiling. Hopefully they pick up one of those signature wins, at least one of those signature wins this season. But let's talk about those wide receivers that Talia is going to be throwing to. Jayshon Jones returns, leading receiver last year, had a big year. The two previous seasons before that, he was still a little bit hobbled with those knee injuries, two straight ACL surgeries, but he was fully healthy last year and it showed. So he's the senior leader coming into this season, but the group around him is pretty much going to be brand new. Ty Felton returns, should play a big role. You've got young guys like Octavian Smith Jr., Leon Houghton, Shalik Knotts, highly ranked guys who are, I believe, all sophomores this year, all underclassmen. But they pick up two big weapons in Tyrese Chambers and Caden Prather in the transfer portal. It seems like Mike Locksley, this year it's losing Dante Demas, losing Burkim Jarrett, losing Jacob Copeland. It seems like he's always ready to backfill with really good wide receivers. It feels like a long time since we haven't had a stacked wide receiver room at Maryland. But Mike, other than Jayshon Jones behind him, who do you think steps up as that number two option for the Terps this season?
Well, you look at the transfers, and I've got to think at least one of those two is who Mike Locksley's looking towards having step up, whether it be Prather or Chambers. I've got to think one of those two guys, even though you've got the young sophomores, and at the end of the day, one of them may emerge among them. I've got to think it's between those two, and I'm really excited about the two transfers that they got in there, because it really makes the transition from the loss of receivers last year, I think, a lot easier. That room is still pretty darn talented.
Yeah, Pat, I mean, talk about the wide receivers and then tight ends as well. I mean, you got Corey Dyches, who also operates pretty much as a wide receiver a lot of the time. The tight end position, a little bit of a concern because there's not much depth behind him with CJ Dupree and Weston Wolf both transferring out. But Corey Dyches also an option in the pass game, especially on third downs.
Yeah, they went from a little bit of a logjam at tight end to having a little bit of a dearth of, I don't want to say talent, but because Dyches is obviously the guy, but he's more of a pass-catching tight end, very good at that. They don't have a prototypical blocking tight end, or at least not that we've seen. I don't know enough about the Dylan Wade and Rico Walkers of the world to know how they're going to fare in that regard. But that, hey, if one of them's big and can block, that might be all we need them to do. With the other receiving threats that you guys alluded to. I mean, I was going to mention this too in the last segment we did, but I'm glad we moved on to this, and it ties into that as well. It's even more impressive what Locksley has done in the NIL era and with the turnover that, I mean, Maryland is that school that's ripe for the picking because they get a handful of talented recruits every year. They get nationally televised games. They get there's just notoriety around there, and we get a lot of local talent that we bring in. And if they show any semblance of production, they get snagged by a blue blood or SEC team or something like that. So makes Loxley's job even harder. And I think what he's done even more impressive because, yeah, I mean, if Prather or Chambers pans out to be a bona fide starter, I think that's a huge win right there. Hopefully both of them can live up to the hype. And yeah, this is about as good of a receiving room as I've seen, you know, in my time watching and covering Maryland football. Might not be the most talented, but it's just as good from a floor standpoint.
Yeah, so obviously in order to throw the ball, you got to have time to do so. And the offensive line is definitely the biggest question mark on offense, maybe of the whole team this year. You lose a lot of guys. You lose Mason Lunsford. He transfers to LSU. You lose Spencer Anderson and Jalen Duncan to the NFL. And you lose Jahari Branch as well. So that's a lot of guys, four starters. You only return Eric Harris, DJ Glaze, as Harris was sort of a part-time starter at center. DJ Glaze going to be the starting left tackle this season. They add a lot in the transfer portal. Corey Bullock, Marcus Dumerville, Gottlieb Ayedze. They add a lot of guys, a lot of experience, a lot of size. But Mike, how big a concern is this offensive line when you're dealing with a lot of new pieces?
And don't forget Colton Peary, who is now at TCU, and he was supposed to be the starting center this year as well. It is a concern. Now, they did bring in some quality transfers, a couple of guys that you just mentioned there, but it's certainly an area to watch because this offensive line, and last year is when it came together, they were pretty good with run blocking and pass blocking. 2 years ago, I think we talked about how they were actually better pass blocking than run blocking, but it's definitely an area to watch and a reason why I think that this year is going to be more of a challenge than the last 2 years because of that O-line right now and how guys settle in. Now, certainly being able to run the football or having talented backs and hopefully being able to establish that will help in pass pro if they're successful there with the play action pass. And they do have a lot of quick passes that should help the offensive line and not having to hold up too long. But yeah, it's definitely an area of concern. And we're not going to find out a lot about that O-line getting tested, you know, maybe until week number four against Michigan State.
Yeah. Now, Pat, I think one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is Brian Braswell returns for another season as the offensive line coach. We've seen him. The offensive line has progressed in every single season that he's been there. He's done that with maybe lesser known talent as well. So if there's a silver lining or a reason not to worry quite as much looking at the names on paper, it's probably Braswell being in charge of this group.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, I think just like I said, Maryland is ripe for the picking with its players. It also seems to be that way with the coaches. When we ever have a successful assistant or coordinator, they get snagged up as well. So we've seen a lot of coaching turnover over the years. It's nice to have Braswell back for another year. I agree. I think he's a good coach. I think our line was a strength last year. Obviously, a lot of upperclassmen last year that aren't there anymore. But I think the talent they brought in was about as good as they were going to get having to fill three, four spots. So I agree. It's a question mark. I hate having either line be a question mark because I think the defensive line could be a bit of a question mark as well for this team. That scares me in the Big Ten, not being solidified in the trenches. But, you know, they have these early season games to kind of get their feet wet and figure it out. And the coaches had those games to figure out who the most talented players are. And let's just, you know, like Mike said, that week four game against Michigan State, let's just hope for the best and hope they're not outmatched.
Now, the position that probably has the least amount of question marks, at least on offense, is running back. They return basically everybody. Roman Hemby, Antoine Littleton, Bramone Brown, Colby McDonald, they're all back.
Which is surprising because I think they're all talented in their own right. And there's only so many carries to go around.
Yeah, so Pat, I mean, that's the first question I was going to ask you. I mean, carries, we don't see those traditional bell cows anymore, the 20, 25, 30 carry guys per game. Roman Hemby pretty much established himself as the full-time starter last season. You'd expect him to get somewhere between 15 to 18 touches in the run game and the pass game. Behind him, is it Antoine Littleton that steps up as the two option? Who do you see there?
Yeah, I think ideally, I mean, I think you nailed it. Hemby's clearly the one, the 1A, the guy who if there's going to be a bell cow, so to speak, it's going to be him. He's going to be the starter. He's going to be the guy who gets the most of the stats, most of the touchdowns, things like that. But I think Antoine Littleton is his best complement because you can bring him in goal line. He can block. He can get short yardage situations where Hemby can do that stuff too. But, Hemby's going to be touching the ball a lot and is also a pretty good receiver. So, to give him some breaks, and then you have the other two guys, McDonald and the Ramon Brown. His name was escaping me, but those guys have shown flashes as well.
Yeah, the kid Ray from Michigan, I know Loxley spoke highly of him, but Loxley said he thinks that Brown may be the best talent in that running back room. Now, obviously, he's not going to be the starter, but he obviously is very high on that young man, and we'll see when he gets the opportunity what he does with it. And, presumably with the schedule for the first 3 weeks, especially week one, the hope would be that these guys get some reps here.
Preserve Hendy, I would say.
Yeah, right. As the schedule gets progressively tougher, but week one, Towson, then Charlotte, and then Virginia. So hopefully in the first week or two, these other guys in that running back room will get some decent amount of reps and show what they can do.
So, Pat, you mentioned the defensive line. We're going to switch over to that side of the ball now. Similar to the offensive line, you're replacing a lot of talent. Ifeanyi, Mazaia Nisalikite, a lot of guys departing off of that defensive line. All three starters from your odd front are gone, including both of your starting outside linebackers who also kind of provide pass rushing and run stopping off the edge. That's going to be really tough this season. I mean, how big of a concern is the defensive line for you?
Yeah, the D-line is a concern. I like Johnson in the middle. I think he could be a good nose tackle. The rest of the group, really on the ends and D tackle, are going to be unproven assets. So don't want to put them down till I see them, but I also don't know if they're going to be any good or not. The linebackers though, I know we lost some people there, but I'm optimistic about the linebackers, especially in the middle with Barham and Hippolyte. I mean, Hippolyte hasn't necessarily turned into the player that I thought he would as a recruit and a freshman, but he's been solid, and he's still one of our better players on defense going into the year, I think. And then Barham's a beast. So, I think that they could help the defensive line out in some of its deficiencies a little bit. If they can have their gap discipline and not be missing tackles, it might help shore things up a little bit in there. But I'm sure you're going to get to it, but we all know the strength of this defense is on the back end.
Yeah, and look, in addition to Barham and Hippolyte, you get Fanaji Gote back for another year, so that's going to be big. Mike,
yep.
I thinking through and looking at the lack of experience, at least on the edge, Barham is a guy who can play both inside and outside. I mean, do you think we see him a little bit more on the outside, slide Gote in alongside Hippolyte, and maybe take the pressure off some of these younger pass rushers?
I could certainly see that happening. I mean, given the fact that he's one of your best players, I think defensively you're going to want to utilize him in as many spots as possible. So I certainly think that's something you could see. We'll see where it settles in. I was just going to say about the defensive line, the Jordan Phillips transfer is huge.
Yeah.
They really need him to step up and have a go of it. He's getting a second opportunity here, but I think a lot of the success or lack there of the D-line is going to depend on what Jordan Phillips does, and let's hope that his transfer pays off. Because, and I think, Pat, you just talked about it with the transfer portal, Mike Loxley finished in the top, I think they had the 17th best transfer portal class, which is extremely impressive. That's rated differently than the high school class coming in. But that was huge, and he did a heck of a job there. But when we talk about trench play, and Zach, you talked about Doomerville on the offensive side, but Phillips on the defensive side, that's going to be huge this year.
Yeah, if there's one thing similar to Brian Braswell on the offensive side, Brian Williams has done a really good job making more out of less on the defensive side, at least as far as maybe some recruiting rankings are concerned. He's taken a lot of JUCO guys like Mazaia Nisalikite and Ami Finau and really turned them into legit Big Ten defensive linemen. So that ought to give you some hope as far as him doing a little bit more with these younger, more inexperienced guys.
Yeah, I thought those guys the last couple of years, very blue collar, I think underrated to an extent. I was pretty impressed with what they did with the defensive line, mostly obviously against the run game, and the stats got better last year. I think a lot of those guys were unheralded, actually, and I think they got more out of them than maybe we were expecting.
And look, they're going to use a heavy rotation along pretty much the entire line, including the outside linebackers as pass rushers. Man. So a lot of these younger guys, you look at like Neo Avery, who they flipped from Ole Miss close to signing day. That's a guy who could play a big role as a true freshman, maybe on passing downs and maybe more on rundowns as the season goes along. But there's a lot of guys in the mix. It's just going to be a matter of these first 3 weeks finding who fits into those certain roles and using them accordingly in Big Ten play.
Yeah.
Pat, you mentioned the secondary being a strength and safety position definitely is. You got Dante Trader and Bo Braid both returning. Maryland likes to mix up coverages. Brian Williams will switch between single high and two high looks. They'll use some quarters coverage. It relies on safeties. And, you know, I remember last season in the West Virginia game, how well those two guys played with each other, switching off responsibilities as the strength of the offensive formation switched. I mean, how important is that going to be to have both of these guys returning for this defense this year?
Yeah, and real quick before I get to the safeties, can't forget about Donnell Brown, the transfer coming off the edge too. I mean, another pass rusher showed great signs of that at St. Francis, PA. So, some young guys there off the edge. But to answer your question, you're never going to find a bigger advocate for the safety position than me. I mean, I think it's one of the most underrated and important positions in football. I know cornerbacks get all the money and the attention and glamour, especially in the NFL. But almost every great team, NFL or college, I mean, I'm thinking more NFL really, but every great team has at least one great safety on their team. You cannot, especially in today's, and that's my dog, by the way, you cannot, especially in today's game with the pass heaviness, even in college, you cannot get away with having two deficient safeties. That is just never going to be a winning formula, especially when you play good teams late in the season. Very rarely do you find any team at any level with two really good safeties. It's hard to do. It's hard to pay to. It's hard to draft and develop to or recruit and develop to. The Terps have done that there. I mean, these are two homegrown guys that have had success already. Like you mentioned, they play off of each other and they're ball hawks. And I'm excited to see these two play. I'm really hoping that they can, you know, remain healthy for the year and really solidify the back end of our defense. Because if they can, I'm at least not going to have to worry about getting beat over the top or that those big plays that are really momentum swings and just kill a team.
Yeah, we saw a couple years ago, you had Nick Cross and Jordan Mosley on the back end. Both guys very talented in their own right, but both were like box safeties and they were trying to play them deep. And you saw that game against Penn State in 2021 at home and they were getting absolutely obliterated over the top. So that's hopefully something that doesn't happen this season, Mike.
Yeah, Jahan Dotson.
Yeah.
We were in that game till the fourth quarter, and then we let Dotson go crazy. And I don't know how you let that happen with their best player. Of course, he now plays for the Commanders, but you're absolutely right. And they got some depth there with Avante Williams, a safety transfer from Miami, Jaquan Shepherd, the corner from Cincinnati. I thought Shepherd might win a starting role. I mean, Cincinnati over the last couple of years has been a very good program, as you know, and made it to the college football playoff with 2 years ago under Luke Fickell, who parlayed that into a job at Wisconsin. So they've got some depth there that's been added in. But you're right. Both of those guys are outstanding. You know, Trader is not afraid to get physical, even though he's the free safety. He'll come up and stick for sure. And you mentioned Nick Cross. Cross was great at coming up and really sticking guys as well. Very physical.
Yeah, you mentioned Shepherd. And I think the cornerback position was definitely a question mark coming into the year, coming into the portal season, because you lose Deontay Banks and Ja'Quarian Bennett to the NFL. You return Tarheeb Still. He's going to play sort of in a nickel boundary kind of hybrid role, depending on who else is on the field. But adding Shepherd to go along with guys like Corey Coley, Lionel Whitaker, Kevis Thompson, Gavin Gibson, there is some talent there, Pat, but a lot of it's unproven behind Still and Shepherd. So you really got to hope those two guys stay healthy.
Yeah, it's certainly not the deepest position. I do like Coley. I think he could take a step forward. Yeah, I mean, Gibson and Whitaker, definitely unproven assets there. I mean, hopefully the great safety play can kind of help mask some of that.
And a pass rush.
Yeah,
exactly. And a pass rush. So That's the thing. And when my worries about the front too is not as much in the pass rush department as it is in the run stopping department. So in the size. So yeah, I mean, I think that I think we're certainly going to see the secondary make some plays this season, and should be an exciting bunch.
So we got to touch on special teams before we move on to Towson. Really, the only thing that's notable, I mean, Colton Spangler moves on, so it's going to be Anthony Pecorella as the starting punter. And hopefully I got that one right. No, I did not. It's going to be Colton Spangler as the starting punter. Anthony Pecorella is the one that moved on. You had the duo. Yes. Now we got the single in Spangler this season. Now, kicker is another story. Chad Ryland goes to the NFL. He's with the Patriots now. So it looks like Jack Howes is going to be the starting kicker. It's never fun when you have sort of a question mark at kicker. We got really lucky with Ryland transferring over from Eastern Michigan last year, but that is going to be a little bit of a concern. We'll see how that shakes out the first few weeks. We'll see how tested he is, but let's just hope this offense can put more touchdowns on the board than have to settle for field goals. So we don't really have to worry about relying on him too much.
Yeah. That touchdowns are always fun in football. And you're right. We've been really spoiled at Maryland with great kickers. And I think that, well, I guess if you're a program that doesn't have good kickers, you're definitely not undervaluing them. But I think it just as a whole, again, I mean, I'm not as much of a kicker advocate as I am safety advocate, but at the same time, how many winning teams have a deficiency, a kicker or a kicker
Alabama
that they can't rely on? Well, Alabama's had some pretty good. I mean, I know they not necessarily
lately. I'm saying like say 5 to 8 years ago, Saban just had this run of absolutely garbage kickers,
and that was, I feel like, a trend in college football too, where I'd see like on SportsCenter not top 10 plays, like half of them would be shanked college kicks every week, and the position itself has definitely gotten a lot better over the years. But I mean Spangler, I saw he's like an all Big Ten preseason selection, so he should be fine. Yeah, he's legit. Hopefully, you know, maybe there's a rub that kind of happens with the good kickers that have been here before, and it's just a little College Park magic with the leg, and we have at least, because you don't need him to be hitting 50 yarders every game like Ryland, but if he can just not kill you and make the ones inside the 40, that would be great.
Well, and I just wonder how much of an emphasis recruiting-wise Maryland puts on kicker. And I'm not saying they don't value it, but you wonder if they're so heavy going after some of these other positions so heavily that, you know, the kicker's a position that falls by the wayside there. Let's hope not. I don't know about you guys. It seemed to me, though, with Chad Ryland later in the year, he was kind of underwhelming. And maybe that's perception over reality. I don't know. Started out strong, but there were a few kicks here and there where you expected a guy like him to make those, and he missed them.
Yeah, I don't think the offense was good enough that I don't think he cost them any games, but I do think there were some makeable kicks that he missed.
It was like once his streak ended, he kind of was
right. I mean, he missed one against Michigan, I think, that was fairly fairly big. I believe I'd have to go back.
My memory's not that
there
good.
There were a few long kicks that I expected him to make a few because of his resume coming in, and he didn't make them.
Weather was bad in that game.
The moral of the story there is, I think we all hope for this year when we play Michigan, when we play Ohio State, I don't want to see our kickers unless they're kicking extra points and kickoffs.
That's right.
You're not going to beat those teams kicking field goals, so you might as well not even attempt them.
Now, I will say Jack Howes has done some kickoff specialist duty in the past, so he's got a big leg. See if he can.
Yeah. Is there no Australian guy? I feel like they always pull a punter or a kicker from Aussie land. Like, is there not?
I don't know. No Wade Lees. No 40-year-old punter, Wade Lees, the lefty.
Yeah. I mean,
he was 19 of 23 last year. So that may have been my perception. I mean, he did make second team all Big Ten. So
I think he got drafted. Right, I think all four of those misses came like late in the season, though, the last couple games.
Yeah, that's the way it felt. Yeah. And one or two. But anyway. Yeah.
Well, let's talk Towson for a little bit. I don't have a ton of insight into the Tigers. I don't know if either of you guys
do. I almost went there as an undergrad. That's about the only insight.
You know what's weird?
Beautiful campus, fun school.
You know what's weird is Maryland's only played them twice ever. They're 2-0. Twice ever.
In the press box, I believe, for that first one.
When was the last time? When was the last
2017?
Yeah, I was in the press box. And then you know what? you're jogging my memory because I remember now hearing that. That was the first time these schools ever played. And I was like,
it was, I think bizarre. They played them in 2011 and 2017.
You know, and I think I was, and Pat, I may have been in that game too now that I think about it, because that was under the previous coaching staff. Yeah. And didn't, who was the quarterback in that
Kasim
one?
Kasim Hill, I think. Kasim,
yes, yeah. I think that's right. I think that's right. Yeah, out of St. John's, right?
Before he got hurt.
Didn't Kasim light him up? That was when we were all like Kasim held up. And I think
he got hurt against UCF the next week.
Yeah, like the next week. Yeah, and then it was Max Bortenschlager.
Right.
And speaking of that season, though, guys, that was the year. Wasn't that the year Tyrell Pigrum? Was he the starter to begin the year? He got hurt against Texas.
That might, yeah.
And was that the same year or was that the year before? Bortenschlager
was our third down the.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same
Well,
year,
regardless, right. yeah. I'm trying to make the Pigrum connection because somehow he was still in college last year playing for Towson. They are going to have to replace him at quarterback this year. That's kind of their biggest question mark. They have four different guys competing for that job. None of them really have any experience. So
their O-line, they're replacing, I think, three-fifths of their O-line this year.
Three starters on O-line, two starters on D-line. And
it sounds like strategic scheduling by Maryland, because Towson for a lot of years in like the 80s, 90s, I think early 2000s had a pretty good Division 1, 2A or whatever they called it back then football program.
They were ranked a lot.
Right. And that might have not been the type of early season matchup that floundering sort of middling Maryland teams were looking to play early in the season. So they pick, you know, and they probably didn't want to risk last year going up against a quarterback they let go and everything like that. So they wait till Towson's in a rebuild year and they say, hey, you guys want to come 30 minutes down the road and play?
Well, they picked a great year for it because first year head coach, they fired Rob Ambrose after like 13 seasons. So you've got a Baltimore native, but a former West Florida head coach, Pete Shinnick.
Yeah, Shinnick's had a lot of success. His dad played for the Baltimore Colts, played in Super Bowl III. And I actually interviewed him on my show back in the spring on The Fan. And I think he's going to do well there if his resume is any indication. And the fact that he's a local guy, so he knows the area, and obviously it's more of a talent-rich area now than ever before in the Baltimore, D.C. area. But, Zach, your memory is correct. In 2017, they beat Texas, but that's the game in which there was an injury at the quarterback position, and Kasim Hill came in and played the next week, or played late in that game after, Pigrum got hurt.
Right.
Hill came in, he came in later. Yeah, Kasim Hill came in later. And then, started against Towson, had a couple of early touchdown passes to DJ Moore in that game. They won 63-17 that year.
Yeah, so let's hope for a similar game here. It's probably a more talented team on paper that Maryland has. And Towson, first-year head coach, inexperienced quarterback, not a whole lot of returning experience on the lines, which is, we know when an FCS team goes up to play an FBS team, the biggest talent disparity is on the offensive and defensive lines.
Yeah, and I'll say this because, Pat, you and I have been talking about this with Zach here, is that with the O&D lines, you know, this we talked about playing Howard in years past and that, that really can't happen again. But taking a look at the schedule, taking a look at the lines, it's probably good the way the schedule plays out again, building up against Towson and then Charlotte and then Virginia before Michigan State. So it gives those lines an opportunity to hopefully have some success and get some continuity before things get a lot tougher up in East Lansing. So this schedule plays out well. You know, if this was last year's team with this schedule, I'd say Towson week one, you can do better. But this may actually play out well for them.
And three straight home games, which I think is good for this team. It's good for anybody, really.
Yeah. Good for the fans.
Towson, if they have strengths, it's at the skill positions. They return a lot of talent, running back, wide receiver, corner. They return most of their starters from last year. So will be interesting. So I want to get a couple predictions from you guys for the season. And we don't need to go through the whole schedule, obviously. What's your gut, Pat, on how many wins they can pick up this year?
Yeah, I don't have – I just actually closed out the schedule on my browser here. But I want to say I looked at it like a few weeks ago when I was writing one of the articles. And I think I had them at about 8 wins again. I also want to say the Vegas line is like 7.5 or something like that. So they have us right around that range as well. It's just tough because it's tough to sit here and say, especially not having seen them play a game yet, oh, this is going to be the year they knock off Ohio State or knock off Michigan, you know, two top five teams. I think that without beating a blue blood, it's probably eight wins is like the ceiling, but I think it's very doable this year because Mike just alluded to a very easy non-conference schedule, get those wins in the pocket. Then, if I'm not mistaken, it was like Indiana and Rutgers or something like that are at home. So like the winnable games are at home. So you don't even have to worry about falling into like a road trap. Those winnable conference games are at home. You got to take care of business. Illinois, I think, is like homecoming or something like that. You got to win those games. And as long as you take care of all of those games, I think that puts you up to seven. And then you just got to beat like a Michigan State or a Penn State to get that eighth win or whatever. But I think they can do it.
And Mike, Michigan and Penn State both at home this season.
Yes, that helps as well.
That helps. Penn State, though, I think a better team this year, although a lot will depend on how Drew Allar ends up not graduating, but how his game ends up doing. Because last year he got in at spots and he showed, you know, he was wet behind the ears, but a lot will depend on his development. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, I'm going to be very cautious and say seven because of the trench play. I'm concerned. Hopefully at least one out of those two lines ends up having a really good year. We'll probably be watching the other one of those lines and maybe having some issues there. I tell you the two games, though, in terms of the trenches to look at, you know, that Illinois game, October the 14th, that's going to be a game where they will get tested in the trenches. Brett Bielema is a power guy, and he's got that offense that's old school like they did at Wisconsin. But Illinois in the trenches will be very difficult on both sides of the football. And then Nebraska looks like a win here. And Matt Rhule usually doesn't turn his programs around until year three. But late in the year, I think that game may be tougher than people expect. Again, also possibly in the trenches there, and that's on the road. So those are two games that should be wins, but I'm a little concerned about. So that's where I look and say, I'm going to go seven and keep it there. You'd like to think that maybe they could pull it off against Penn State, but you know, we'll ultimately have to see about that. Michigan and Ohio State, again, that's they're going to be tough dragons to slay.
All right. And I'm going to go with Pat and say eight wins. I think if they're going to knock somebody off, a blue blood off, if they're going to make that next step as a program, it's this year. And, you know, you look at the next couple of years with a question mark at quarterback and all of those things. I think if they're going to do something, make a run, it's going to be this season. And I think they have the talent to do it. I'm going to go out on a limb here and just say that both of you guys predict Maryland to beat Towson. Would that be a correct statement?
Yeah.
All right.
I was going to look up the line and I don't even feel like doing that.
Yeah. I don't know what the line is, but I can look it up here real quick.
Well, just say this: good teams take care of business. And regardless of the fact that it's week one, let's see what that score is, because this team, if again, they continue what they've done the last couple of years. Although Mike Loxley's quick to mention, hey, every year's a new year. It's not building upon last year. You know, we talk about the media a lot, but it's really, this is a new year, new set of challenges, new team. The opponents are at least a little bit different as well. But you know, good teams against the Towson, they take care of business and should win comfortably. If they don't, you know, I guess we'll see what week two then brings.
Absolutely. Well, so definitely check out the BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. We've all got stuff up there. I have two articles previewing the offense and defense up there already. I'm going to have my game preview for Towson up later this week. Pat's got stuff up there. Mike's got stuff up there. So be sure to check that out. Join us on the message boards at BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. We'll be there during the game, before and after. And follow us on Twitter at TalkingTerpsBSL. Until next time. I'm Zach Kiesel. For my co-host Mike Popovic, Pat Donahue, roll Terps.